Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. My name is David, the El Paso Conservative, and today we're going to be talking about something that nobody seems to have an answer to in regards to this crazy time. But before we get into that, I just wanted to go ahead and let you all know that by the time that you hear this, I am recording this Monday, November the 2nd. It will be National Election Day. Just go out there and vote. I don't really care who you vote for or why you voted for them. All I care is that you vote, because we can still all communicate regardless of our party identification. I think that's one of the greatest misnomers in political in a political lexicon right now, is that we disagree, therefore we are enemies. No, my friends, no, we are not. We may have opposing viewpoints politically, but that is but one out of a million topics that you can disagree on with anybody, for that matter. So those of you who are out there listening, who, you know, may not necessarily agree with the viewpoints of the show, I want you to know that we can still talk. We can still be friends. We can still interact with each other through any medium without further dividing ourselves based on our identities. There is no need to be, oh, well, I'm a Latino, I vote this way, or I'm African-American, I vote this way, therefore I can't talk to anyone. No, that's preposterous. And to suggest anything, to suggest that idea be what society has to become, is nothing more than preposterous and idiotic. So on November 3rd, vote your conscience. Vote your views. If you don't vote Republican, vote Democrat. If you don't vote Democrat, vote Republican. I'm not going to tell you who to vote for. You obviously know who I'm voting for. You already know which of the politicians I support, but that doesn't mean I'm going to influence you to do the same. Ultimately, you do your research, you be informed, and whatever candidate holds your moral and your moral views on life, that's who you should vote for, regardless of party lines or regardless of your party identification. Always vote morals and your conscience. So, speaking of conscience, this is something that I know a lot of us have been looking at it the past couple days, basically the custody battle between the mayor and the county judge over who can really issue these stay-at-home orders. And, you know, you hear it traditionally reported, you probably heard it through KFOX, through KVIA, through, you know, all these sources, and I'm not going to report it to you again. However, what I will report to you is my personal take on the matter. Now, the issue between these two stems it begins October 29th, 2020, when County Judge Samaniego decided to issue a two-week stay-at-home order, which, upon reading it, really didn't do anything, as it seemed. And within hours, we had a rebuttal from the mayor, and now we have this whole custody battle for for El Paso County and, you know, El Paso in general. And I think the day afterwards, there was a lawsuit filed against County Judge Samaniego, in which Attorney General of Texas Ken Paxton joined in the suit. So, that was interesting, and today, a district court has placed an injunction on the order until it can be heard in court. I do believe that arguments for it begin November the 4th, if I'm not mistaken. I believe so. You can go ahead and look that up. Sun City Livestreams have had a great coverage of this, so I would recommend them if you're going to be going for information on the suit. But that's not really what we're going to be talking about here. What I want to talk about, at least, is my rebuttal to Executive Order 13. And everyone seems to have a clear and concise idea of the legality of it, I should say. I, for one, don't. I can tell you, as of right now, I have no idea. I am in no way, shape, or capacity an attorney at law, and therefore I do not completely understand the legal and precedent reasons for this executive order. However, what I can talk to and what I can, I guess, speak to is the amount of research that I have done in order to come up with a legal reasoning of my own for Executive Order 13. Now, if you want to go ahead and read the district, the county attorney general's legal reasoning for this, I'm pretty sure you could find it online, El Paso County District Attorney, and just go ahead and look that up. And I'm pretty sure you could read it. I'm not going to go ahead and go verbatim here, nor am I going to read it to you, but I do suggest that if you have the opportunity, you can go ahead. You should go ahead and look for it. You can go ahead and find it at www.scrib.com, scrib.com/document/48231414, final opinion, and you should be able to get the El Paso County Attorney, County Judge Disaster Act powers legal justification. But I'm going to be looking at this as a whole. Now, keep in mind, I am no lawyer by any stretch of the imagination. However, I have done a sufficient amount of research for me to be able to explain this executive order, at least in the terms it was issued in. And I can talk briefly about the precedent and the legality of it when we get to it. But for now, well, actually, let's go ahead and get started with our dissection. So, I had sent this to both the county judge, district attorney, the attorney general, and I have submitted this to the media, local media here, but I haven't seen it go anywhere, so that's for me to basically do it on my own. And seeing as how I am sort of a journalist, if you could call me that, we'll go ahead and we'll start looking at it. So, today, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton joined in a lawsuit in regard to Executive Order 13 that was issued on October 29th, 2020. Ms. Burnell has issued a statement, that would be the county district attorney, regarding the legality of Executive Order 13. And in that reasoning, Ms. Burnell is invoking Texas Code Section 418.1015A and Section 418.1015B. The provisions in this code grant A, the proceeding officer of the governing body of an incorporated city or county, or the chief administrative officer of a joint board, is designated as the emergency management director for the officer's political division, and B, an emergency management director serves as a governor's designated agent in the administration and supervision of duties under this chapter. An emergency management director may exercise the powers granted to the governor under this chapter on an appropriate local level. When responding to the claims made in Attorney General Paxton's letter and subsequent court documents, it is important to address questions surrounding the claims and counterclaims contained in the suit. Under the Texas Constitution, Article 1, Section 28, it clearly states that the power of suspending laws in the state shall be exercised by the legislature. This section clearly demonstrates that no other body other than the Texas legislature may suspend any law pursuant to the Constitution. The Disaster Act of 1975 states that the governor may suspend the provisions, orders, or rules that would in any way impede necessary action in responding to a disaster. In this act, the state legislature is acquiescing its power, granted by the Texas Constitution, and granting the state executive that power. The actions taken by Governor Abbott, in accordance to the Texas Disaster Act of 1975, are unconstitutional pursuant to the Texas Constitution. Precedent exists that suggests that Texas courts have held this position as well. In the case De Leon versus District Clerk, 2006, the Court of Criminal Appeals' decision for Texas through a per curiam decision stated, furthermore, only the legislature has a right to suspend statutory laws. In the case Brown, Cracker, and Candy Co. versus City of Dallas, the Supreme Court further established this in their opinion, authored by Justice Brown. In Durden v. Dupree, Texas CAV.APP.275, Judge Key, in his usual and forcible style, points out the difference between the former and present provisions of our Constitution, and states clearly the effect such change must have upon this question. Quoting the present section 28 of Article 1 on the Constitution, that learned judge says this: "This section restricts the power to suspend laws to the legislature, and expressly prohibits the exercise of such power by another body. In view of this provision of the Constitution, it must be held, whatever may have been the power of the legislature under former constitutions, that the body cannot now delegate to a municipal corporation or to anyone else authority to suspend a statute law of the Senate. Through established law and established precedent by the courts, we can conclude that the Texas Disaster Act is in direct conflict with the Texas Constitution. However, the legality of the law withstanding, I would like to analyze the argument brought forth through the legal reasoning. As I stated in the introductory paragraph in the legal reasoning released by Ms. Burnell, she is invoking Texas Code 418.1015, Parts A and B. In Ms. Burnell's assessment of Texas Code 118, she designated a county judge as an officer of the governing body. And if this is true, that would mean that the county judge would serve as the governor's designated agent in the administration and supervision of duties. By the admission of the El Paso County Attorney, the county judge is a designated agent of the governor and would be subject to the way in which Governor Abbott has handled the current COVID-19 pandemic. And here we come to the second point of contention, Executive Order GA-32, which was issued October 7th, 2020. GA-32 effectively sets out the limits for restaurants and bars to operate, as well as sporting events, just to name a few. GA-32 states, 1. Bars may open. 2. Schools may open. 3. In areas of high hospitalizations, capacity can be limited from 75 to 50%. And 4. Suspending sections, 418.10-15A and B. In accordance with Ms. Burnell's legal reasoning, the county judge would have had to issue guidelines in conjunction with this order, and not to the contrary. Not only is this not a viable explanation for EO-13, but the justification that was given is contrary. It's contradictory, I should say. The last issue raised by court documentation is the constitutionality of EO-13. We're looking at this through the lens of federalism. We know that the governor has a final say in policy of the state until said action is challenged in court. Judge Samaniego has expressed through the media that his order is legally binding until a court reverses the order. Judge Samaniego is therefore effectively making policy for both the county and city of El Paso without consulting the legislative bodies of both. The action, in effect, would be in direct violation of the Texas Constitution, Article 2, Section 1, that separates the powers on a state's level. So, what's my conclusion? Through the statutory examples provided and the precedent examples provided, it is clear that Judge Samaniego does not have the authority under Texas Code Section 418.1015A and Section 418.1015B under the pretext of GA-32 and the Texas Disaster Act of 1975. Through the actions of the governor, the actions of Judge Samaniego are not legally binding, unenforceable, and unconstitutional for the reasons set forth in this analysis. If the district court should rule in the favor of EO-13, this would establish a dangerous precedent where any county judge could usurp the decision of the governor. It is worth stating that I do not believe that the judge acted in bad faith. Rather, I do believe that he has acted in the best interest of El Pasoans who are currently battling COVID-19. So what does this mean? So while doing the research for this, and let me tell you, it was a lot of research for this. This isn't a battle over whether lockdowns are a good thing or a bad thing. That's not the argument here. Whatever stance you take on it, it doesn't really affect the question. The main question in this case, if it does go through the district court, and I'm assuming that whatever decision will be reached will be appealed to the Texas Supreme Court or to the federal courts, and ultimately end up to the U.S. Supreme Court. Whether it will be granted a writ of certiorari or not is a matter of discussion for a different day. But I do believe that it will be appealed. And the main issue in this case, looking at it solely through a legal perspective and not one of a political perspective here, is does the county judge have the authority to usurp the decision of the governor on a local level? Now, this raises two very interesting points. Or two very interesting discussions. The first is, in times of emergency, do we give local municipalities more control than in times of, I'd say, relative peace? And two, if the district court decides yes, how far will that power be limited to the county judge? In essence, it's a discussion. Does a county judge or any other official have the power to not only make a legally enforced legislation, but also does the acting official have the power to outrank the governor in that case? Now, there could be two very easily... I could see two answers for this. I could see both sides of the argument. I'm pretty sure the plaintiffs, the businesses that were affected by the shutdowns, and the attorney general, for the plaintiffs, those just so them, I'm pretty sure the plaintiffs are going to argue, as I argued in the rebuttal, that they're going to say that because the governor in, I believe it was GA-32, in that executive order, because he suspended that part of the Texas Disaster Act of 1975, then that means that the county judge did not have any legal authority in which to do so. And if that's the, and if the, I'm pretty sure that's going to be the argument of the plaintiffs, among other things, but I'm pretty sure that it will be the main argument. And the defendant, I guess you could say, because I'm pretty sure it was just Samaniego in the lawsuit. I'm pretty sure that the main argument that he's going to present is the COVID-19 data for El Paso, and he is going to be pointing to Section 418.1015. And he's going to say that he did have legal jurisdiction to issue his order. And I'm pretty sure, well, I can almost guarantee that the court is going to look at one question. Does the governor have the authority to suspend an article or to suspend certain points in a statute, in a statutory law made by the Senate? And this is where things get complicated. Well, it's complicated already, right? But let's try to break this down. On a national level, into a national level. On a national level, there was this thing that was called a line item veto, where the president could veto certain lines in a bill and pass others. That was ultimately ruled unconstitutional by the U.S. Supreme Court. Coming back to our example here, it's much like that. Does the governor get to pick and choose which law, which provision of a law he will enforce and which he will suspend? And does he have the power to do so? Ultimately the defense is going to argue that the governor did not have the authority to strike out that, because effectively he is creating legislation. And he's going to argue, and some people may argue, that without the consent of the legislature, the move of the governor in his executive order to suspend both those sections is unconstitutional. And if that's the case, if that is the case that he was going to bring forth, most likely it will be, but I'd have to wait to see the transcripts. But if that's the argument that he's going to make to the district court, I think he's won. And I think he's absolutely right. I think that the governor, if this is the main issue of the case, there are certain different examples that I'll get to. But if that's going to be the central order of the case, I think Samaniego won. Because the governor does, much like the executive on a national level, does not have the power to simply state, that they are not going to enforce certain sections. In the case of Bill Clinton, it was a veto. And in the case of the governor, it was not necessarily, it's not necessarily a veto, but it's a admission of not of a non-enforcement. Now, if the governor did this with only the, if the governor had done this only within the executive branch of the state, and he told the Secretary of State and the Attorney General, we're not going to be prosecuting crimes, we're not going to be prosecuting citations, or we're not going to be enforcing citations that deal with these two sections for so-and-so, then I think that would have been better, because that is just a move within the executive branch and not necessarily affecting the scope of Texas. Rather, it would only be affecting the people of which citations have been brought forth for breaking COVID-19 orders. But I can also see how the question may shift from, does the governor have the authority, to, does the county judge have the authority? And if they're arguing that the county judge does have the authority, he lost. Samaniego lost. The attorney general and the plaintiffs will win, hands down. Because as it stands right now, in pure black and white, as it's written in the law, okay, GA 32 preempts all local directives, meaning that the governor has a final say in it. And in the executive order, he specifically set out guidelines of which to handle this. And as the county attorney said, that the county judge is an acting designator of the governor, then that means that the county judge would have had to issue similar rulings or similar guidelines to that of GA 32. He didn't, and that's where the problem is. So if the argument brought forward to the district court is going to be that the county judge does have authority, they're going to lose. They are definitely going to lose. And moreover, a district court, when looking at this, will also, in effect, be setting precedent if the county judge does win under the context that he has authority, meaning that the county judge in matters of, or I should say, for the interest, for the best interest of El Paso County, or for any county, would have the right to usurp the governor. Now that creates dangerous precedent, because how does one identify best interest? Now, granted being in the times that we live in, it's easy to say, okay, well, COVID, you know, to keep our hospital rates down and to keep our hospitals less full, to get the number of cases down. Okay, I can definitely see that as an explanation, but how does one define best interest moving forward? And I think that's a question that the court also has to tackle if they're going to rule in the favor of Judge Samaniego, with the argument that I had brought forth that he does have the authority. Excuse me. And I don't see the county judge. I don't see the county judge winning in that section. It's something I don't see. I'm sorry, but. In this case, we'd have to watch what the district court says. As of right now, there is an injunction placed in this order, so we'll see. We'll have to see what happens. Which, you know, you're gonna get reports from everywhere, everything. Oh well, this that, you know. But I would heavily encourage you to read the court documents, and I know the court documents aren't the easiest thing to read, but it is a primary source, and you can get information from there that it will be missed by all major news outlets, because all major news outlets are biased. I'm just saying. Especially now with the election literally but a days away, it's something that we should watch out for, to say the least. And it's a battle, not even for El Paso, but in the greater context of Texas, because we challenge the separation of powers in this case, and it's going to be interesting to see what the district court and further subsequent courts say, because this is civil litigation here. Isn't charged with crime. I'm assuming that the plaintiffs are assuming some kind of damage and are requesting some kind of money from the county, if not from Samaniego himself. I'm pretty sure it's not. I'm just saying that they are claiming damages. I'm not so sure that they may want money. But it is civil litigation, so we'll have to see how this plays out. Which, you know, I don't see it playing out any other way than Samaniego losing. Unless he uses the illegality of the governor basically vetoing a section of the Texas Disaster Act. Then possibly, but I am no judge, I am no lawyer. I cannot say with 100% certainty what will and will not happen. I don't think any of us can say with any certainty what will and will not happen. However, what I will say is that it will be an interesting case. It'll be an interesting decision that the district court will make, and it'll be a monumental and historical decision if it does get to the Supreme Court regarding the legality of COVID-19 lockdowns. Now, let me reiterate. That does not mean that we believe they don't work. It does not mean that we think they are bad. What it means is that it basically means, in a bigger sense, I should say, that we take issue with we take issue with the separation of powers being violated. This is basically what this comes down to, and sure, it may have the backdrop of COVID-19 lockdowns, but that's the main issue with the case. The media will sell you on that, oh, it's a COVID-19 lockdown pushback. Which, okay, granted being, some people will push back and use this as a scapegoat. But it is more a battle of the separation of powers than it is a pushback on COVID-19 lockdowns. And granted being, as I said, some people will use this as anti-COVID-19 lockdowns. I've seen it before, and I will not attest to that because that is irrelevant to the discussion that I'm having currently about separation of powers. If you want that opinion, I'd suggest you go to KFOX, ABC7, CBS News. They'll give you that. They'll give you the opinionated news. I don't want to get my opinions in this. I, however, will tell you the facts. I tend to go for the facts. I'm sorry, I dropped my phone. And with that 30-minute episode wrapped up, I'd like to say thank you for tuning in. I will get back to you as I get more updates on what's going to happen in this case. And who knows, maybe just on election day, I might drop a mini rant for you guys in the context of a greater political atmosphere. Well, I'd like to thank you all for watching, and for tuning in, I should say. And if you enjoyed it, you know, go ahead and follow me on Spotify. Go ahead and follow me wherever you get your podcast. You know, go ahead and share it. Tell your friends about it. Because it really helps not only get the word out, but it helps me reach more people who I would not have otherwise had if just as a news outlet. Well, I'm not saying news outlet, right? But as an independent political commentator, I guess is what I would be called. I think that's a technical term for it, but whatever. That's not what we're talking about. But anyways, gentlemen, thank you very much, and I will see you guys soon. This is the El Paso Conservative.